Natalie was brought to my house. She was very fussy. She had been up twice during the night before. She had projectile vomited in her car seat that morning before coming to my house. I just thought I could help take care of her, and she'd settle down, and I kept trying and trying to feed her her bottle. I got my kids ready. I got the other two young kids into the stroller. She was the last one I went in to get ready. And as I went into the room, she kind of cried a little bit, her head tilted. She just made this little whimpering noise. Her bottle was on the floor somewhat away from her, and I didn't think of anything about that at the time. As I just gently picked her up and started to put her on the floor to put her jacket on, some formula came out of her nose. And I got very concerned, and I picked her up, and I patted her on her back, and I wasn't getting any response. So holding her upright, I zipped outside with her, and I screamed for help to one of my neighbor ladies who was waiting for me to come as a bunch of us met outside, and we're going to walk with our kids to the preschool. And she came running down, and I was still holding Natalie upright, and I wasn't getting any response. And she said, "You need to run in and call 911," which I did. That is when the first time I put her down on her back as they were talking to me, asking me questions, directing me to do CPR. Very shortly after that, two police officers arrived, then the ambulance arrived, and then they just started asking me questions, and they took over in a different area of the house from where I was. And then the MedFlight helicopter had to come, and this was all just a blur to me. I thought that the ambulance people would help her, they'd get her breathing right, she'd be okay, and I was very wrong. She was taken to the hospital. I knew nothing of what was going on. I went to the hospital that afternoon to visit her mom and dad. Her dad did not come talk to me. Her mom did, and her mom had called me that day earlier on, and she was very concerned about how I was and wanted to know what happened, and the mom was very, very nice to me at the hospital. They said they'd keep me posted. I heard nothing that morning. The following day, I called the hospital, and then early that afternoon, I found out that she had died. And I just could not figure out what in the world had happened.
When did you realize you were going to be charged with killing this child who prosecutors say died of shaken baby syndrome?
I went down for questioning with the Dane County authorities, some people from Dane County, which was where I was living at the time. And everybody told me, you know, this is just regular protocol and when these kind of things happen. And the interview was about 3 hours long. I had an attorney sit in on it with me, and he said, you know, everything seems fine, Audrey. It wasn't fine. And I found that out a couple months later in January when I was notified that I was going to be charged with this baby's death. And I was just flabbergasted. I was like, what in the world is going on? And at that time, then I had hired an attorney that had been referred to us by my then husband's corporation. And we had no medical evidence, no preliminary anything. We had nothing other than show up in March and you're going to be charged for this, which was what happened. I gave birth to my third daughter in February, and I had two other children. And then that November, I had the trial after 8 days. We only had two medical people testify on my behalf. At that time, my attorney had said to me, Audrey, it's really, really hard to get doctors to respond and to reach out with this right now. The prosecution had seven. And they all said that it was shaken baby due to the 1971 medical theory that was implemented at that time. None of them could say what exactly happened within a 24-hour period, but the jury still found me guilty.
Why do you think the prosecution ultimately was successful in putting you in prison?
They charged me that on the fact that there was a subdural in the baby's head and there was retinal damage. They had terrible dramatics in the courtroom saying it's equivalent to a fall from a two-story building, and this could only be a cause for major abuse, and the onset of the symptoms would happen immediately. And the drama that the DA played just makes me still to this day want to throw up because it was so awful, and it wasn't true. And I think sometimes, too, when all the medical evidence, experts, medical testifiers, I should say, can't agree, how can 12 jurors try to come up with a concrete, righteous decision when they don't have the medical evidence and knowledge to make that decision? When doctors can't agree on it, how can 12 untrained medical people try to agree on it?
I'm speaking with Audrey Edmonds. She spent 11 years in prison for allegedly killing a child who prosecutors say died from shaken baby syndrome. The Innocence Project in Wisconsin was successful in getting that conviction overturned. That diagnosis has become increasingly controversial in the past years as some doctors and medical experts claim that shaken baby syndrome is overdiagnosed and is not always as easy to identify as some prosecutors claim. Edmonds is speaking tonight at UIS. Audrey, I wonder what toll this took on your family and what their reaction was when you ended up in prison for this. This ultimately resulted in divorce, for instance.
Everybody was just devastated. They just couldn't believe. Even people that were in the courtroom were like, Audrey, there was more than enough evidence to prove a reasonable doubt. And what were these people thinking? And you know, we don't know. We can't climb into their brains and think. You know, when I was put on the stand, the prosecutor put a lot of words into my mouth. She put untrue things that were written down on the preliminary reports because the investigator put her own words down. She did not put topic of words that she and I discussed down, but that was not allowed in court.
Did you ever lose hope that you would leave prison without fulfilling your full sentence?
I always held on to hope. I was very, very fortunate to always have legal representation. The day, the night that the verdict came down, my attorney then said, we're going to appeal this, and I had no clue what an appeal was. So my appeal started immediately. I worked with my first appellate attorney for 3 years, then I went on to the Federal Court of Appeals, and that took several years. And then the Innocence Project worked on my case for about 4 years before I was released. I never gave up hope. I just never, ever thought it would take so long.
And so let's talk about how you got involved with the Innocence Project. You were one of the first shaken baby syndrome cases they took, correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And so how did you even know to get involved with them?
The whole thing goes the opposite direction. I was very, very fortunate that there was a neurologist, one of the top neurologists from UW-Madison Hospital, had contacted them. And then he saw Keith Finley, my attorney, at an event in Madison and talked to him about my case. And so I was very fortunate because after that conversation, Keith had a couple of his students contact me to say that they had medical proof and truly believed in my innocence and wondered if they could help me. So that was a great, great blessing there. And at that time when they contacted me, I was still working with my federal appeal. And then when that did not work out, I was not granted relief through the federal appeal, I contacted the Innocence Project right away, told them what happened, and then they immediately had students come visit me and started working on my case.
And so what's life been like since being released? Obviously, the Innocence Project was ultimately successful in getting you released without, fulfilling your, I think it was a 12-year sentence?
Yeah, I would have had to do one more year in prison, and then I did just days short of 11 years. I would have had to do one more year before getting out on parole, and then I would have had to serve 6 years on parole.
So you still served, obviously, a huge chunk of that.
I did. I did 11 years. It was awful. It was a long, hard time. My heart just goes out to people waiting that are wrongfully convicted, waiting to get out. And part of that, too, is the prosecution just asks for delays and delays and delays. Every time we would file a brief and ask for a response within 90 days or 60 days, they almost every time would ask for an extension and get it. I said to my attorney one day, I don't even want to count the years of extension time that they got. And he said, exactly, they got way too much. But that's how it works.
I'm speaking with Audrey Edmonds. She's a Wisconsin woman who spent 11 years in prison for allegedly killing a six-month-old who prosecutors say died from shaken baby syndrome. Audrey, how frustrating was it for you that the prosecution maintained its belief in your guilt throughout this, regardless of your conviction ultimately being overturned?
They're in denial. I have been very, very blessed that just a couple weeks ago, I had a neurologist call me from Madison who knew my case, read my book, who said, this should have never happened, Audrey. This was wrong. I've had the investigator come to my attorney shortly before I got out, and she confessed to him. She stopped him. She confronted him. She confessed to him that she had been set up to do this case, and she knew she wasn't seeking the truth. We've also had people from the MedFlight contact me since my book came out, saying how they were so upset how the prosecution tried to make them say things that were incorrect. And then we've got the coroner who said, no, he was wrong in this case. He has been very, very helpful with my case ever since the Innocence Project contacted him. And now on top of that, you have Dr. Gutkulch, who was one of the original doctors who put all this together in the late 60s, and it was approved in 71. And he has come forward 2.5 years ago and said everything he said about shaken baby syndrome is not true because of new medical and scientific evidence. The DA in my case, the prosecution, does not have a case. They don't have any medical or scientific evidence anymore to uphold their conviction.
And so what has life been like since being released as far as finding a job, making money, reconnecting with your own daughters?
Reconnecting with my daughters is wonderful. We connect a lot. We did a lot together when I first got out. Even after the divorce, I still saw them regularly. I talked to them on the phone a lot. It's been good. It's not at all the way I thought I would raise my daughters, but we have a close relationship. We have a lot of fun, and they believe in me. They know what has happened, and they're very great supporters.
And then as far as getting a job and, getting back on your feet financially, that's not something that you're going to have support from the courts.
As you might know, Wisconsin is working to get a compensation law, and it would be retroactive, and we're hoping and trusting that that will be passed in the very near future, and that many of us who've been wrongfully convicted, I was number 9, and they are close to 20 now, and almost all, if not all of us, would be compensated for that, and not that it's all about money, but they have done wrong, and they've taken away job security, pension, home value, all kinds of things. And it's not all about money, but they do need to give us some kind of support in that area, because when you get out as an exoneree, you don't even have medical care from the state as parolees do, and that's just not right. People on parole get apartment assistance and job assistance, and exonerees, you get out. And thankfully, I've had great friends and family that I could stay with and that have been helpful in some type of job. But I don't have any kind of income like I did when I was working outside the home or before I came into prison.
As you mentioned earlier, you've connected with Pamela Jacobotzi, who's the Illinois woman the Innocence Project is representing, who has gone through an experience that's similar to your own. Other people convicted of this crime who claim they're innocent, as she does, do you have any advice for them?
I want them to keep the hope up. It's a long process. Unfortunately, it's a very tedious process, and there's only so much your attorneys can do to get you out as quickly as possible. And so keep the hope up. Know that your attorneys are working on these cases, as are the other professionals, because they believe in your innocence. And I hope and trust that very, very soon, more and more of these wrongful convictions will be overturned.
And why do you think it's important to share your story about this with the public at large?
People need to know that just because everybody is charged with a crime, the investigators and the prosecution always haven't done things correctly, and even some of their witnesses are bribed. They don't have all of the proper information that they're giving out in the courtroom, and that, yes, wrongful convictions happen, and I don't wish that on anybody, but they do happen, and they have happened, and we need to be more supportive of getting the wrongfully convicted out, because nobody would want to go through this, and anybody can, because it's a guilty till proven innocent system.